When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
4.6 billion.
The Earth forms.
Cambrian.
542 million.
Complex life explodes.
Permian Triassic.
251 million.
90% of species die.
Cretaceous Tertiary.
65 million.
Meteor kills the dinosaurs.
55 million.
Primates appear.
2.3 million.
Pleistocene.
200,000.
Humans.
20,000.
Agricultural
250.
Revolution. Industrial Revolution.
60.
Great acceleration.
The Anthropocene.
Welcome to Generation Anthropocene. I'm Leslie Chang. Today on the show, we're featuring a conversation that our producer Jackson Roach had with Camille Dungy of Colorado State University. Camille is a poet and a professor of creative writing. In 2009, she edited an anthology titled Black Nature, Four Centuries of African American Nature Poetry. In this interview, she discusses how racial history can deeply influence our relationship to the natural world. Jackson spoke to Camille via Skype a few months ago. Here is their conversation.
I think you mentioned at the beginning of the anthology that there was a particular tree growing through the filtration system of an abandoned swimming pool. And I'm wondering if you could tell me that story of how you started to think about the natural world in your art.
So the story of the tree is that there was a park very near my home, and I would walk around the park. It's just like perfect keep you sane distance for a morning ambulation. Like just 3 miles, it doesn't take too long. It's like just enough to keep your head balanced every morning. And so that was my typical path. But it would take me by some crazy things, like Stonewall Jackson's the packet boat that took his dead body to its final burial place. Like that was in this park. Like, sort of just rotting away with this like plaque next to it. And I would walk by it every day, little Stonewall Jackson's final resting place, essentially. And then this pool, which wasn't a pool, it was all filled in with grass, and there was this beautiful tree, a box elder tree, growing out of the pool works, as you said. And it took me some time to learn that a group of activists in Lynchburg, Virginia, staged a swim-in at the city pool, saying, you know, I think Black people should be allowed to swim in city pools. And the city was like, yeah, no, we don't think so. And so rather than integrating the pools, they filled in all the pools in the city. And they were just like, yeah, nobody's going to swim. We really don't feel like integration is what we're up for. And so here I am, and it's this beautiful lawn, and it's got this beautiful tree. And the idea that this tree, the roots of this tree are literally tangled in the workings of this pool, that's a testament to this history, this complicated and cruel history in the town in which I lived, that goes back to Stonewall Jackson and his packet boat and comes forward to me, who was at that time only the second African-American tenure-track professor at this college that was founded in 1891. I was the second African-American tenure-track professor, and this is 1998 that I got there. And so then when I start writing poems that are history, but I'm also bringing in the landscape, right? What I think about landscape just started to open up and explode. And it seemed to me that could still be a nature poem, a poem that was in celebration or interrogation of that tree. But it wouldn't be a nature poem that we would see in a anthology that required us to keep nature pristine and to separate human involvement. And I wasn't particularly interested in poems that separated human involvement, because never have I understood my ability to move through an environment as something that could be entirely pristine and entirely separate from history, culture, my position in society, or the ability of other people to have particular positions in society. And so I just became really committed to a poetics that acknowledged the entanglement of human endeavors when we're understanding our larger environments.
Totally. Yeah.
I mean, I think, for instance, in California, we have all those muster, you know, like one of the beautiful things that happens, particularly along the corridor near the El Camino Real, right, are these beautiful kind of stands of wild mustard, right? And it's so great in spring when they just come up and it's those beautiful fields of yellow. Those wild mustard fields are there essentially when the Spanish conquistadors and missionaries came through, and they like enacted the parable from Matthew of spreading mustard seeds, right? The parable of the sower, they just enacted that. And so those beautiful field mustard that I love, that to me are linked with my idea of my childhood in this kind of wild, untouched space, those are directly connected to a legacy of genocide, right? Hmm. And of cultural dominance and appropriation. And so, you know, it's part of our wild world, but it's also part of a wild world that's connected with a whole nother people group's subjugation and imperilment. And I feel like I can write in a way that acknowledges both those things, that I love those fields of wild mustard, but I can't ignore the history implicit in the presence of that mustard here.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be a theme, not just in your poetry, but in the poems that you include in the book, the idea that sort of our history in so many ways leaves a scar or a memory or a thumbprint or something, like, actually in the earth itself, like imprinted in the earth.
Right.
Yeah, so it's really, I think it's really powerful to hear you talk about that mustard, you know, the mustard flowers, like, as not just a this thing that the earth somehow produced without us, but that it is a sign of our being on the earth.
Right.
I guess I want to ask you about your research process a little bit, and how you went about creating it, and sort of what your goals were or expectations were going in, what surprised you. I really wanted to point out, I love how in Ravi Howard's introduction to the second cycle, the Nature Be With Us cycle, that he mentions mm-hmm. the etymology of the word anthology, and he says that it's a bouquet, a garland, a harvest of language and imagery.
Mm-hmm. It's this gathering of flowers, this gathering of language. The etymology of the word poem and poetry comes from this idea of something being a made thing, and also like a piling up of stones, rocks, like a cairn, right? And so both of those words too have this nod back to something outside the human, but also a human interference, right? It's not just like a field of flowers, it's a gathering of flowers. It's a gathering that somebody has come and taken care to adjust in some way. The same with the you know, we talk a lot about poems being organic, you know, like you go to workshops, like, well, is this an organic? No, it's not. Like you're sticking your hands in there and your mind, and you're doing something, right? So there's ways in which we can make a poem feel more natural. There's things about symmetry and breath, et cetera, that are more or less natural in the way that an iron lung can be more or less natural, but still an iron lung, you know, it's an artificial tool as opposed to your natural lung. So anyway, that's an aside. The anthology has a number of origin stories, as we all do. All the good books have more than one origin story, right? There's the one in which I say, I've always been writing this way, I've always been thinking this way, and it just I got lonely looking around and not seeing myself reflected out there in the world. There's the moment when I was kind of writing these poems that I was writing, and a friend who was Laura Gray Street, who actually was a colleague of mine at this little college in Virginia. And she was really deeply connected with ASLI, the Association for the Study of Literature Environment. And she wanted me to come to an early meeting. And I was like, you know, I write about people, right? Like I sometimes write about how I miss California, but that's not, I'm not really a nature poet. And it took me some thinking to think, the only reason I'm not a nature poet is because I've bought the definition of what the confines of nature poetry can be. And within that definition, the work that I was writing was not there. But couldn't I be part of shifting that construct, right? And changing the way that we limit this paradigm. I think that, you know, Black Nature was published in 2009, and 2013-14 brought us the really great Arcadia Project anthology by G.C. Waldrop, and then the next year was the Eco Poetry anthology, and I think this year brought us Trace by Laurette Savoy, essays on thinking about race, and Drew Lanham's collection about being a Black birder from South Carolina. And I feel like this kind of movement of broadening the scope of how we talk and how we talk about how we write about the natural world and the non-human world and the human and built environments, I think that I was part of a zeitgeist, right? Like I was a part of a shift in a moment when people were like, we can't just talk about pristine wildernesses. Most of us don't live in pristine wildernesses. The security of the planet is dependent on our understanding the interrelationship between human history and human commerce and endeavors and the non-human, its effects on the world around us. And so I came at a moment, and I would sort of take some credit and say that I do think that the presence of Black Nature was a clarion call, you know, like it was like people would come up to me like, I never really thought about Black people writing about the natural world, but here you've got over 100 right here in this book, you know, like surprise, surprise. And so I do think that it was, that was an important intervention, but I think also that at this, in the same moment, there has been a great deal of blossoming on this front.
Yeah, you mentioned that when you published the book in 2009, people were like surprised that, you know, I've never, you know, that thing you said, I've never heard of, never even thought about Black people writing nature poetry. Why do you think people were surprised?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I just went and talked to the university in upstate New York last week, and the guy who introduced me was like, until I read about this book, it just never occurred to me that Black people would be writing about the natural world. I'm like, dude, it's been out a long time now. work through that separately of your intro to me. But I think it's because Black Americans have been so radically disenfranchised from the land, right? That the force of the northern migrations of the early to mid 20th century pushed the significant portion of African American populations into urban centers. And so in those urban center spaces, because we think of nature as pristine, right? Because we don't think of nature as parks or bugs or rodents or each other. We only think of nature as big rocky mountains and, you know, Yosemite, et cetera. We forget that when people live in urban centers, they too live in an environment, right? And so we forget that there are ways of thinking about nature that don't have to do with Yellowstone and giant national park spaces like that. So that's one thing, is the mass urbanization of African Americans, so that my childhood story becomes an anomaly, right? Like you don't look at me and think, oh, you grew up in affluent Irvine. Like that's not what you expect anyway of looking at a when a black person walks in a room, like there's a stereotype of what the parameters of black life in America can be. Also, there is the fact that in those open spaces, black people have been imperiled, either through the legacy of slavery, where the black body lived in this complicated dichotomy of being both animal and human, right? And so kind of trying to move away from the animal, right? Trying to like push for centuries now, trying to push against being perceived as an animal. And so why would you have a connection with an animal if you're trying to like push away from centuries of a legacy of that particular limitation? But also, you know, that whole legacy of trees, right? If I walk under a tree, what are the other memories that that I have either through my kind of epigenetic code or like a direct family memory or just stories, right? So trees were sites of lynchings. The open spaces were sites of danger, of hunts where the quarry were human beings, right? And so they're not like, I can't necessarily walk out into open space and be like, oh, I feel all safe and secure in a way that the white folks in the REI commercials get to be.
Right.
But then there's just that too, you know, I just recently, the National Park System had their 100-year celebration because they just had their 100-year thing this August. And I was looking at one of their pamphlets and like, all of the outdoor spaces, their cartoon representations are all white people. The only place they had people of color were in like the DC parks and the urban parks, right? It's like even the national park like bought into their idea that only white people go to the outdoor spaces and the black people go to the museum in Philly and DC, you know? So that, I mean, all those reasons complicate people's perceptions.
Yeah. Yeah. Because of all of those things, black people in America have written a different kind of poetry about nature, it seems like you're saying. And I'm wondering sort of if you could describe what are the features of that ecopoetics? Is there an identifiable or distinctly African-American ecopoetics? And what does it look like?
I think my answer is going to be yes and no. My answer is going to be yes. There is a distinct channel of poetics that African-American people and I think people of color in general have. And that channel is what I'm talking about with this sort of interweaving of historical questions and questions of space, you know, the ability to claim space, the ability to sort of call some land your own land without sort of, oh, and then also there was this point where like the farm that was our family farm got raided and like taken from us for what, you know, in whatever way. So that like that sort of, I am going to write in praise of the land, but I'm also going to tell some very harrowing stories. Like that, I think, is something that is not particular to, but evident in a great deal of African-American and poetry and poetry of people of color. Because I think indigenous Americans will have a similar kind of complication with their communion with the land because of the intersection of white American history with indigenous American history. I think Latino Chicano writers will have, particularly in the West, will have a complicated story because of United States dominance of areas that had once been Spanish domains, you know? And so those kinds of family histories and legacies and things will pop up in the writing of people of color when they're writing about the land and landscape. But I also think that sometimes, you know, black people are just writing like the poetry that was kind of just like everybody else's, but nobody was looking at them. So when I collected the poems for Black Nature, I had two typical interactions with poets. And one of them were interactions wherein people would say, I don't write nature poetry. And then I'd be like, well, so I really wanted that poem that was all about the river and your family's relationship to the river and the sort of story of that. And they'd be like, oh, I guess, you know, I suppose it's a nature poetry, but I really thought it was just about finding Emmett Till's body, you know, like, and so that, like, yeah, like, how can we not think about, what was it you said, like the stamp on the Chattahoochee River and like the stamp of that trauma on that particular landscape? That's a very human trauma, but it's also this river is the Tallahatchie River, but is running over that history and legacy. And I want both of those. But the other thing that happened was that poets would say, thank you very much. I've been writing nature poetry all this time and nobody was coming to me. And so I think sometimes actually Black people are just writing straight up obvious nature poetry, but they were not being seen because of the limits of perception.
Yeah. I have a couple of questions about the idea of the Anthropocene and the idea of a rapidly changing globe in this context, and how you see, you know, as you said, that at the same time there is and there isn't a Black ecopoetics in America, but I'm wondering if you see that ecopoetics changing or adapting to the reality of this world that we're altering so fundamentally across the entire world, and what you would imagine that to look like.
Well, I mean, I think that this is crucial. I think that if we don't broaden the audience for and the participation in the writing of environmental literature, we are doomed. Because there are so many people on this planet. And if we don't involve those people in the conversation about how to stem changes and these catastrophic changes and heal, then there will be no stemming of catastrophic changes and healing, because we have billions of people living in communities of color who are directly affected, you know, so frequently in the low-lying basin areas, in places where questions of environmental justice are most deeply imperiling particular societies and communities, so that this conversation, it's imperative that we broaden the network of who's speaking and how they're speaking and who we're writing to and how we're writing to them, or we're just doomed. Every time we hear, I just believe that every time we hear new voices, every time we hear new perspectives, we have new possibilities to move forward, and new kinds of alchemy made possible because of new elements in the big magical pot.
I like the big magical pot metaphor.
I think that engagement is part of it, right? When we don't see ourselves in the literature, we don't have to be involved. Like, we don't have to care. We don't have to have a stake. When we do see ourselves in the literature, then we're like, oh, I'm there, and my body's there, and my family is there, and it matters that I do something about it, right? And so that's another reason, like, we get more Black people thinking about the environment, then it becomes like, oh, this is not just something that doesn't affect me. This directly affects my life. And then you do more work, right?
Yeah.
This is our epic, right? Like, we have this moment. The Earth's going to be here. It's just going to be here very differently, right? And so how many other species are we going to take with us? How many other cultures are we going to devastate? And before we just figure this out and hold our leaderships accountable and stem our use of resources, or, like, figure out, you know, just... I don't know. I just don't know. But I feel like I'm so happy when I hear people who are under 30 years old who are as invested in this question as you guys are, because it's your future, right? And God bless you. I don't know. So much work we got to do. So much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
All right, you guys take care.
That was producer Jackson Roach in conversation with Professor Camille Dungy. Once again, her 2009 anthology is titled Black Nature, Four Centuries of African American Nature Poetry. She also has a forthcoming book in prose titled Guidebook to Relative Strangers, Journeys into Race, Motherhood, and History. It'll be out on June 13th. Our show is produced by Jackson Roach, Mike Osborne, Miles Traer, and me, Leslie Chang. Special thanks also to Tom Hayden and Isha Salian. Our project is supported by Worldview Stanford and Stanford Earth. You can learn more about the podcast online at www.genanthro.com. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter @GenAnthropocene. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next Tuesday.